Oh, that's right. We're right here at Sharp Facets Gallery this afternoon, 4:11 in the afternoon. How you doing? God, the sun is shining. It is beautimous out there, folks. I tell you what, if I could be outside, I certainly would like that. But I have a very special treat for you today. Today, we're going to be talking to Barbara Hinkle. She does live over there in McCormick, and a most interesting person. Grew up in Africa. And then from there, the story just continues and continues. I certainly hope you're going to enjoy it. Not only did she grow up in Africa, went to some very interesting schools we're going to talk about, she also started her own etiquette business, something that you wouldn't think would be as needed. I think it's needed, but a lot of people have thought that, well, that's kind of passe, but Barbara will tell you they're hungry for that knowledge. So Barbara Hinkle, how are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderfully well, thank you.
Oh, I love the accent, too. I'm sure everybody will be transfixed by the accent this afternoon. Now, it's interesting because you were actually a British subject living in Africa, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And you were born in Africa, or?
I was born in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
And from Zimbabwe, moved to Zambia, mm-hmm. and then to Malawi. They weren't named that way when I was born and moved, because it was the Federation and it was all breaking up at that time.
So that was a very interesting time to be living there, even though, Gracie, you're being helpful here today, even though that wasn't something you probably realized. Looking back on it, you probably go, wow, all this was happening all around us.
Yes. As a kid, you are just where you are, and that's normal life. Looking back, there's been so much happening in my life that I really haven't looked back that hard and that closely at my life. Only recently have. Maybe it's age. But it was a special time, and there was a tumultuous time. Africa, going through those 60s, was tough for many people, and I, as a kid, was oblivious to it all.
Sure, absolutely. That's the thing about it. But I can't imagine sitting there and thinking back, wow, you know, like when, let's take Woodstock here in the United States and some of the things that happened, and people that look back now and they go, wow, I was there.
Well, you mentioned Woodstock, but over in Africa, we were 50 years behind the times there. So listening to the music of what was happening in America just didn't get to us for quite a few years.
Yes, but after living in Africa, you went to school back in England, correct?
Yes, I did.
Yes.
I did.
So you had the Beatles.
Absolutely. I love the Beatles.
Now, how many sisters and brothers did you have?
I'm one of five, two brothers and two sisters.
And I understand you're still the baby?
I'm second baby.
Second baby?
Yes. Not even worthy of a glance.
Oh, come on now, Barbara. Now, you have done so many exciting things, and one of the exciting things is, you know, for those who have been able to see Barbara's house, what a fabulous treasure trove it is of African art and African artifacts. I tell you what, you know, that has to be fascinating to have collected all these things.
Well, it's not only my lifetime's collection, it's my mother's lifetime collection. And all of the pieces have a special story and a special place in my heart.
Yeah. I mean, but it has to have been, I mean, did you build the house around the artifacts? That's what I need to know.
No. Only the drum.
Only the drum, yeah. Now, some of these pieces, of course, you said goes back to your mother. What did your mother do?
Well,
raised five children.
Raised five children, yes, absolutely. She was of that era. And she and father got married in 1938. After a very long engagement, father had graduated from Cambridge when the depression was on. Mm-hmm. And he went to Africa seeking work and joined a brother out there. Had a terrible, terrible car accident where he went through the windscreen and broke both his femurs.
Oh.
This meant that he was in hospital for 9 months.
Wow.
And then by the time he earned enough money to pay his hospital bill and get passage back to England, 4 years had passed.
And she was still there?
And she was still there.
Wow.
He was lucky because Mum was quite special. And he married her, 38. They went out to Africa. And he'd been told, your fortune's north, my boy. And that meant Rhodesia, southern Rhodesia at that time, because all this time he'd been in Cape Town, South Africa.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So they went up to Rhodesia, and Dad built his first house. He made the bricks, He made the bricks, he fired them, and built the house.
I mean, that seems like that's 100 years ago.
Oh, I had this lovely photograph of him with this metal wheelbarrow. And he's got his shorts cut off. And that's where they had very short shorts, the men. The swimsuits were totally covering the body, but the shorts were very short.
Right.
And his shorts are tied up with a piece of string. And he has on a vest. It's what they call these days a wife beater, I think.
A wife beater? Okay.
And my brother, as a baby, is in the wheelbarrow. And
you showed
father.
Me that picture. You yes, showed me that picture.
I think I probably did.
Yeah.
And there's father there building. He was always building something. So mother now is out in Africa, and father's teaching, so he's off to work. And they have a houseboy,
mm-hmm.
and mother is now left alone all day, a new bride from England.
But she felt a little out of place.
Having not seen many black people before, she locked herself in the bedroom all day until father came home. Can you imagine living like that?
No,
I can't. Anyway, she got over it and came to be quite strong in herself and have a lot of chutzpah and be able to manage a house and
that sounds like a movie. Sounds like a movie I've seen, actually, Barbara.
Out of Africa.
Out of Africa. There you go.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a similar time period.
Right. Exactly. So she got over her jitters of coming from England. But that had to be quite a terrifying experience for her, coming from England.
I would think.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I went to England on home leave. And even my cousins expected me to be black.
They expected you to be black?
I really couldn't understand why or where people were thinking, you know, here's this girl from Africa. She's supposed to be black. No, I'm related to you.
That should have been very interesting.
Yeah, the freckles are there.
The freckles are
never,
there.
Never were able to make them join up and give me a beautiful tan.
Now that you look back on being in Africa, I mean, do you miss the landscape and everything?
Africa gets under your skin. You do. You always hanker to visit. I don't want to live there again.
Mm-hmm.
We went in 83 to Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
We were there 2 years, and the idea was to be close to my family. And Ron went to do his MBA at University of Cape Town. We had a place, and we were having a fun time.
Mm-hmm.
However, the 2 years was cut short because of bombing in Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was in two bomb scares. It was a time when housing market was a problem. And we were renting our place in Virginia,
mm-hmm.
and then we weren't able to rent it, so we were losing money. And our little daughter, Heather, was being treated like a girl. No expectations.
Oh, okay.
Just be a pretty, little girl. Just be a pretty little girl, and we won't expect any great things from you. And we knew she needed to fit back into American society eventually, so it was time to come home.
Yeah. But so have you been back there since then, since 1983?
Yes. I used to go every 2 years. I would split my time. Every summer I would take off.
Mm-hmm.
And with my children, we would either go to Europe or America to see the national parks,
mm-hmm.
or we would go to Africa. So whilst my parents were still alive, every other year we went to Africa and spent a couple of months.
So did you camp a lot when you were in Africa, or did you stay within the compounds?
Camping in Africa is not something I would do today.
Okay.
As a woman,
mm-hmm.
whereas camping in Europe, it was just my kids and I, and we did Italy and Greece, Italy and Germany, and it was wonderful, and we felt safe.
Mm-hmm.
Going to Africa, I wouldn't feel safe. But as a kid, we did go camping. We had this Chevy station wagon.
Chevy station wagon. Even in Africa, they have Chevys.
Oh,
okay.
We loved American cars. Mm-hmm.
That was special?
Well, this one was special. It was a pea green color. It was,
it was
a horrible color. But it could take all seven of us and the animals in the car. And Father built a system of aluminum poles, and then we would throw canvas over it,
yeah.
and then the mattresses would be put underneath, and we would sleep, us little girls, Trishy and I, slept in the back of the car. We used to take the houseboy along with us to help with cooking the meals, and we would sleep like that. We would bathe in the streams, and when you needed to use the bathroom facilities, you would go out into the woods and dig yourself a hole. And it was wonderful.
Yeah, well, you know, it was very basic, but very wonderful, right?
Yes. There was the camaraderie, there was the stories around the campfire, there was
the wild animals.
Oh, well, they were there.
Yeah,
You could hear them, but didn't bother us much. Now, my nephew, who used to be a game ranger and take safaris, he would tell the stories of the elephants walking amongst the tents and the tails smacking against the side of the tents. The last time I went with him, we were in Zambia, and we went to one of the game parks. And the idea was that we were going to go camping. And I said, well, it's a long time since I've camped in Africa. Maybe we better go to one of the rendezvous and the lodges first and try it out.
Mm-hmm.
So we did. And then I said, all right, now I'm
acclimated.
Let me go and camp in the tent. Well, we went out in the tent. And he told us the next morning, it was my son and I, that there was no way any self-respecting animal was going to come near us because we were snoring so loudly.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah, it is. That's, you know, I love stories like this, you know, and it's wonderful to think back of times and to share that, you know, here on the radio. I think that's great. Hey, I'm Ann Eller. I am here with Barbara Hinkle. She is world-renowned traveler, etiquette trainer. I tell you what, we got a lot to talk about, a lot of ground to cover from Africa to Britain or England over here to the United States and back around again. Hey, don't you go away. We'll be right back.
Gold. Gold! More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. How you doing this afternoon? Beautiful weather out there. My very special guest today, Barbara Hinkle. She grew up in Africa, went to school in England, and then came over here to the United States in between. She's been back and forth several times, and we were just talking about some of these experiences. Looks like Carl gave us a call. I think he's from over there in Savannah Lakes. And when in Africa, do you go native? I mean, Barbara, we just need to ask this question. Whatever that means, do you go native?
Yes, I would like to ask Carl, just what does he mean by going native? Of course we went native.
And did you find that the attitudes of the natives changed over the years towards your family? I mean, when you were growing up there as opposed to going back in later life?
Well, whilst I was actually living over there, we saw things changing. And this is where, in Zambia, we were there in the 50s through to the breakup of Federation, which was 64, and we had a brick thrown through our window. Well, and then in Malawi, I remember Mother talking about how she had spoken to our houseboy and said, you know, would you murder us? Because there had been a family that had been murdered in the vicinity. And he said, oh, no, madam, I would not murder you. I would murder the lady next door.
Oh, my God. So
this is where you never talked about politics inside the house because the walls had ears. And Dr. Banda, who was the president, was very keen on deporting hundreds of whites at a time. The first load that went out, we were ashamed of them. We thought, what have they done wrong? Obviously, they were doing something that was so offensive to society that they had to be deported. But it got to be the norm, and you realized it was just a means of politics and Dr. Banda taking control of the situation. You never go down a dark street, but it's like anywhere else in the world. You did always keep an eye over your shoulder. It can be pretty dangerous. And South Africa at the moment, I have two sisters and a brother living there. The sister in Johannesburg lives behind 12-foot walls with barbed wire on top. They have a security system in place. The children growing up used to wear a panic button around their neck,
which,
of course, being kids, are not very good about it. So the dog is chewing on one of the panic buttons, and over the wall come the security people to take care of the situation. And with my brother, he was out shopping with his wife and kids. And being little kids, 3 years old, they're under the rack where the ladies' clothes are hanging. And there's a button there, and they push it, and suddenly we have all the security people in the shop. And they've had the bank being bombed, and my sister-in-law being dragged down to the ground, and a man covering her body to protect her, a perfect stranger, mm-hmm. but the bomb was going off 100 yards away, and they're in that situation. So the last time I was visiting, my son and I went to look at one of the artists there had a showing, and I'm very aware that I don't know how much gas is in the car. My brother's car is not that worthy of the road. And I'm realizing that I don't see another white person around. And it's getting dark. And I turned around and went back. I felt scared. Whereas a little girl, I never felt scared at all.
Sure.
And my brother's was on a farm. And his boys, I have a photograph of them with their best buddies, with their arms around three black boys, mm-hmm. all the same age. They were your best friends.
Sure. And today?
I think there's still a camaraderie watching my nephew with the Africans in the market. They had a rapport. He was safe. He was comfortable. They were laughing. It was good.
Mm-hmm.
He feels very comfortable in Africa. But for me, I've been away far too long, and I watch my circumstances. I don't put myself in an unsafe situation. Or if I do, I suddenly turn around and I realize whoever I'm with, the white men, are in a protective stance.
Yeah.
They're following the rear and they're watching. And I'm just walking along.
Like you're in another world.
You know, and yes, in another world.
You know, I think that's an amazing conversation, because look at what we're looking at here in the United States. You know, we used to have that just total freedom for everything. And then we have things like the Boston Marathon and Newtown and some of these other things that are happening. So we're losing some of that carefreeness that we have had.
Yes. And it's not only outside, it's inside too, because with technology today, our kids are being exposed to all sorts of things that if we don't keep an eye on them,
you're right,
we can end up in awful situations. I had a girl in my class up in Virginia, beautiful girl, a talented dancer, clever. And when I came down here, I suddenly saw her mother on the TV whilst I'm at the dentist's office.
Yes.
I thought, I recognize her. And I was right. And her daughter had been murdered by a man that she had met on
the internet.
The internet.
Wow. It's a different world, isn't it?
It really is.
It's a different world. We talk about it being a different world here in the United States. It's even more different, I think, than in Africa. And probably they've been dealing with this, the external, a lot more. The internal, as you call it, the internet and everything, certainly is changing the world that we live in tremendously.
Life is cheap, unfortunately, in Africa. And when I was growing up, it was not black on white. It was black on black. But now it's black on black, black on white.
That's a shame. It is a shame because I know Africa is such a beautiful country.
And the people are so gentle. But when you think of situations like the Hutu and the Tutus and situations like that, it's horrendous.
Absolutely.
This is genocide.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Hey, I tell you what, I'm here with Barbara Hinkle. We are going to hear a word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back. Don't you go away. If you've got a question for Barbara, don't hesitate to give us a call. 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help. From McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here at Sharp Facets Gallery. Barbara, I just need to ask you, I mean, what you grew up there, or you were born there. You weren't a missionary, correct,
there? No. Father was in education, and he was, first of all, started off as a teacher and then promoted to being an inspector of schools. And then when the Federation was forming and that, he was supposed to be the new Secretary of Education. But everything was all falling apart, and he went to Zambia and was headmaster. No, he was in education.
He was in education. Mm-hmm. And then he was a headmaster at a high school, is that right?
Yes. There were two schools. It was Gene Rennie and Gilbert Rennie. Gilbert Rennie was an all-boys school, mm-hmm. and Gene Rennie, an all-girls school. And Father was headmaster of Gilbert Rennie, and we lived on the property at the school.
Fascinating stuff. But how did you get to England now? Now we got to move on. How did you get to England? So you were growing up there, and then what happened?
All right. So I was born in Rhodesia, southern Rhodesia, moved to northern Rhodesia that had now become Zambia. Then the Federation was breaking up. We went to Malawi and signed an emergency list to be evacuated if problems arose. Mm-hmm. And that's where I went to high school and did my O-levels. And then I had to go to England because there was no further opportunity to be educated. So I went to...
They didn't have colleges?
No.
No? I mean, no.
No, and it's quite normal for an eight-year-old to be sent to boarding school. For those who lived on farms, mm-hmm. the kids were packed off and sent to school. It was part of being a colonial Brit.
Hmm.
And so I went to England and went to a fabulous school in England.
And my
O-levels and further education.
Was this the one where Princess Anne went to school?
It was a sister school.
Sister school.
Wickham Abbey. Benenden is where Princess Anne went to school, and it was our sister school. The indication is that that's the level of people I was mixing in.
Yeah. So how did you feel being separated from Africa, growing up in Africa? By the way, I got to ask you, were you always barefoot in Africa? I mean, I need to ask these questions. Yes? You didn't wear shoes?
You didn't. You were out there running around just like all the African children, barefoot.
Okay.
In fact, I had my first coat when I went to England.
First coat?
Yes, I never needed a coat.
Yeah. So when you went to England, how old were you then?
Roughly. To go to school?
To go to school.
16.
16.
Because we had to go back to England, the home of domicile, every 2 years as a patriot, expatriate.
Right.
And so to go and stay there, I was 16.
Okay.
And that's when I went to school at
Wigan. So buying shoes and everything must have been a great experience.
Oh, yes. And I tell you, you know this program about Selfridge, Mr. Selfridge, that's on PBS at the moment? It's wonderful. And I'm seeing the show and thinking, I had to go to Selfridge's. In fact, you still do.
That is a department store
that's
there.
Right.
I've been to that department store, yes.
But Wickham Abbey insisted you went to Selfridge's for your school uniform.
Okay.
And it was wonderful.
Yeah, but how'd you feel about wearing shoes if you'd never worn shoes all your life? I mean, that had to be an experience here now, Barbara.
Well, I did wear shoes on occasions.
Oh, okay.
It was just during the
daytime.
You ran around barefoot. But
okay.
when you went out, you did wear shoes.
Okay, just checking here. Because I was thinking 16 years old and putting your feet in shoes, that might have been a little difficult.
I had shoes.
Yeah,
they were cute, pointy little white ones with little heels.
So you went to school there, and what was the intention? What were you thinking about doing at that point?
To further my education. Well, this was not my idea. This was the parents'. I loved being at home. I didn't want to go to school. I didn't want to leave the country, and that's where I would have been sent earlier if I hadn't created a hullabaloo every time it was mentioned, and the drama and the tears. So
not you. You could not have created drama.
Oh, yes. Every girl knows how to create drama. It's an innate being.
Right, exactly.
So eventually, I had to go. Mm-hmm. And this is where, what was it I wanted to do?
Mm-hmm.
Computers had only just come on the scene, these huge monstrosities.
Sure.
And I did think about doing computers, but I'm an outdoor girl. I really like being in the outdoors. So I'm also very, phys ed is my background.
Mm-hmm.
Into all the sports, and I was good at it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking of being a physiotherapist, thinking of doing ballet for the Royal Academy of Dance, and it came down to being a teacher, and that's where.
So did you do phys ed teaching, or what did you,
yes.
What kind of teaching?
So I went to Bedford College of Physical Education, and at that time, graduating from Bedford, I could have got a job anywhere in the world that was a British territory.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good school. It taught me how to analyze movement. It taught me how to teach.
Wow.
Teach well.
Mm-hmm.
And
the old-fashioned way that still works today?
What's the old-fashioned way? Smack them on the wrist? No. I love kids.
You love kids?
I really do, and I have a rapport with them.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what age they are,
right?
A kid. In fact, if an adult will be just a kid with me,
yes,
I'll get along real well with them too. But I left with my credentials and had met my husband at that time when I was at Bedford College of PE. I then went to.
He was in the Navy, right?
Yeah, he was a fighter pilot for the Navy,
mm-hmm.
and was over there. He was a lucky individual. They do an exchange of one student a year between Cranfield and Monterey.
Mm-hmm.
So he went over to England,
mm-hmm.
and was studying at Cranfield Aeronautical College, and I was at Bedford. I graduated. I went to teach in Worcestershire in England,
mm-hmm.
and was the assistant PE teacher. And I was thinking of going to Australia.
Australia?
Yes.
Okay.
And fell in love with my husband.
So I guess that kind of boomeranged the whole idea about going to Australia, didn't it?
That's right. So we got married after calling my parents in Africa and them needing to chat to me about this little situation. So we met in Cyprus.
Cyprus, oh my God. Cyprus used to be a great place to go, though, yeah, right.
And they realized I loved him and that it was okay. So we got married and then came over to America. And
life has been an adventure since the start.
Yeah, it has, actually.
Yeah, you can tell, yeah. So you came here to the United States.
Mm-hmm. And I needed to do some credentials to convert my English qualifications into American. But I was living in the desert, the Mojave Desert. That was our first duty station, China Lake. My family thought I was going to this beautiful lake like we have here.
Right, like Greenwood. And Lake Thurman.
Yep. It's a salt lake. It was just as well I arrived in the middle of the night.
Because you would have turned around and left, right?
So I became a Navy wife. And I needed to do something. You know, you can only clean a spot so many times.
Sure.
So I joined the recreation department, taught swimming and gymnastics, and at the community college taught dance. And now I'm only a teacher of 1 year, and I'm out getting this experience, and it was wonderful. It fits me like a glove. It's what I love to do, interacting with kids, teaching. So from there we went to Italy, and I started up a gymnastics program and taught swimming. Then we came back to America and I taught gymnastics and swimming. Then I went to Africa and...
Wait a minute, let me guess. Gymnastics?
Gymnastics.
And swimming.
And dancing.
Wow.
I did dancing in the other places too. And it just kept on...
Well, your reputation preceded you wherever you went because you were a Navy wife, right? So, I mean, you were going to places where, oh, this would be good, right?
It wasn't so much that I was a Navy wife, but my reputation did precede me.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you would be on bases and everything, right? Yeah.
I knew what I was doing. I had been taught well. Bedford College of PE gave me the skills with which to handle any physical endeavor. I could analyze anybody's movement because of Bedford.
You know, that brings up a very interesting point because good education stands you well whenever you got it.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, you're talking about many years ago, and still you were able to continue and use that because you learned how to think and you learned how to analyze, plus all the other parts that you needed to do it. But the thinking and analyzation probably gave you one of the biggest gifts.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, exactly.
Really. And this education is crucial. And in America, every child has free education all the way through high school. And it still blows my mind that it's not taken to its full advantage. I mean, for me to go to that school in England, it costs $50,000 a year.
Wow. That was a lot. I mean, that was a lot then when you consider that schools cost that today. I mean, that's a very expensive school today.
But this is where, if I could just get the kids to understand that, go to school and absorb as much information as you can.
Absolutely.
Because it will stand you in good stead for the rest of your life.
It certainly will. Hey, I'm here with Barbara Hinkle. We're having a great conversation. I hope you are enjoying us. Please hold on. We're going to hear a word from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back. If you've got a question, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
Everyone knows Sharp Facets Gallery only carries the finest in jewelry. But did you know we offer the three R's? Repairs, replacement, and restoration. Repairs from sizing to stone replacement. Restoration of your treasured pieces to their former beauty. Or revamping or restyling by resetting your stones in new mountings. All repairs are done by our master goldsmith, Richard. Only Sharp Facets Gallery can provide you with both quick turnaround and professional, reliable service. Come see us at Sharp Facets Gallery on the 72 bypass or call 229-6613.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here at Sharp Facets Gallery. You know, we had a call. I didn't bring this one up earlier because we got so fascinated with our conversation here, but I'm talking to Barbara Hinkle. She now lives over there in McCormick, and Jack Stamper called. He says, obviously, you were a faster runner, or at least faster than the next slowest ones. I think he was talking about the lions or something. Did you ever get chased by a lion?
No, but chased by a few other things.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. So long as you can outpace the other individual, you're the winner. Because you're dinner.
The other one's dinner. That's right. Then we had a call from Jan Medlin. She said she loved Africa from the World Cup. And she wanted to know, what is the name? Do you have a book out? Do you have a book?
I have they're etiquette books.
Etiquette books. Okay. Mm-hmm. And are they something that you can buy out there in the world?
Yes, you can.
Yes? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about your etiquette. What is the name of your books?
Well, they are basic instructional books. They're the level one and level two. Level two is about relationships, and level one is about basic etiquette procedures. And
we're going to talk about that now. But I think what you need to write, Barbara, you need to write down some of these stories that we've talked about here and put it together in book form. I think it would be fascinating.
Well, that's everybody's story. Everybody's story is fascinating. Mine has just got a little twist here and there.
You know, what's interesting is that you and I can sit down and have a conversation like this.
Right.
We know each other slightly, but not really well. But we're having a great conversation here. People are listening and enjoying the conversation. But how many times can our young people get out there and have a conversation that doesn't require some electronic device to be able to text back and forth in today's world? And this leads me into the next topic that I wanted to cover. We're not going to have a lot of time, but we are going to go over a little bit. But the etiquette and today's world. You were commenting a little while ago that I had excellent table manners down there in McCormick the other night. Well, do you know, Barbara, when I was growing up, I just remembered this, when I was five, we were going to go out to eat to dinner for the first time. And this was a big deal. And for weeks and weeks, I had to learn how to eat properly. I mean, I could not go out. And, you know, if I ever picked up a piece of fruit or something and went to eat it, my mother was, no, no, we can't go out. Your birthday's coming, Anne. So, but that's how I learned proper table manners at 5 years of age. And when we went out when I was five on my birthday, it was a big deal to be able to eat right and know what fork and knife and spoon and all these things to use.
You're absolutely right. In fact, out of a necessity, I designed a knife and fork so that a child could hold a knife and fork correctly, where they would put the index finger on the top of the implement at mm-hmm. the junction of the blade and the handle.
Right.
The same for the fork, and cradle the handle in the palm of the hand. The idea being able to flip it over and be able to impale the item, cut it, transfer it to your mouth
right.
without attacking the food, without invading your neighbor's space. And it worked because I had several hundred kids in my program, and I thought my message is not getting through. And that's where I designed these implements and had them made, and it was part of the course for everybody to have these implements and make sure that they knew how to eat. And your table manners and Jeffrey's were impeccable. My husband noticed as well, Anne. Well done, girl.
Well, thank you very much. But, you know, I think about that, and yet in today's world, we don't take the time to sit down and have meals like that so much anymore. People are always eating on the run and everything. And, you know, I just wonder, you're out there teaching manners and etiquette today. In fact, aren't you teaching over at De La Howe right now?
I am.
that, I am, Anna. How are those kids doing with this program?
They're doing beautifully. And
are they interested?
Fun. They're listening.
They're listening.
They really are.
Yeah.
And they're giving me the information back. I get 80 to 85% of the answers correct when I give them a test every week. Mm-hmm. And I'm proud of them.
Sure.
Kids are kids are kids, and these Delahoe kids are beautiful. They're just like kids I was teaching up in Virginia.
So the bottom line here is everybody can learn?
Absolutely. I think everybody wants to learn because this is the means to be able to have a deep and meaningful relationship. Just take the table manners. When you're a slob and eating at the dinner table, it appalls everybody else. And it's not a pleasant experience. When you go out to dinner and everybody's using their cell phones and their iPads and all of that, they're not communicating with the other person.
Sure.
So why did they invite an individual to go out to dinner with them?
Sure.
You're not much company.
Exactly. I agree. I mean, I have seen people sitting at the table texting back and forth and then showing that they were communicating with somebody in another area, and they're all communicating back and forth, but they're not putting these things down, looking each other in the eye, and having a conversation.
Exactly. And this is where a few years ago, as I was with a friend, we were having a weekend. I was working up in Virginia.
This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Go ahead, Barbara. Had to do that.
Sorry. I was up in Virginia, and I was out with my friend for the weekend. We'd been able to manage to get a weekend to go and sightsee. Mm-hmm. And we went to the special restaurant, and we're ordering our meal. And she goes off and uses her cell phone. She was very gracious by removing herself from the dining table, but she didn't come back for half an hour. I'm sitting there for half an hour.
Half an hour?
By myself at the dinner table, and I'm thinking, why did I bother coming?
Sure. I agree.
We hadn't seen each other in 18 months, and the idea was to catch up, and there's nobody there talking to me.
And did they bring the food on as she was gone?
I went ahead and had my appetizer and was starting on my entree. I was offended.
I would be too. I mean,
this was a relationship that goes back 30 years and I'm just dumped.
I know. But this is the type of thing that happens. So in your etiquette classes, mm-hmm. in today's world, we have kids growing up that are going, wow, this is cool to be able to learn how to do this.
Oh, yes.
I mean, yeah.
I've had 10,000 kids.
10,000?
Uh-huh. And when it started out, it was the boys who were dragged, kicking and screaming to the classes. And the girls were all a flutter and oh so excited. Well, after the second lesson, mm-hmm. the boys would be showering, putting dad's cologne on, and telling mom to hurry up and get them to the class, otherwise they're going to be late. And when I do my lesson on a gentleman's responsibilities, when he asks a girl out on a date, mm-hmm. you can hear a pin drop as these boys are soaking it all up. I love it. I just love it.
So it's not out of place in today's world. I mean, I find this refreshing, but, you know, I'm just being devil's advocate here.
Yeah.
It's not out of place today. Kids still want to know how to do these things.
Everybody knows how, wants to know how to operate and act in all situations. When you know how to behave, you can choose whether you step up to the plate and go all out in your performance, or you can just hang out with your friends and act goofy. That's fine. But when you have the knowledge, it's power. You can go into any situation and handle it with confidence. And this is where, when you go into an interview, mm-hmm. you're using your social skills to be able to look the individual in the eye, do a handshake, be able to have the rapport. In fact, I just had a call a few weeks ago from a student I taught 8 years ago, mm-hmm. and he's at Mary Washington University, and he was profuse in his thanks to me about helping him through interviews, handling life, and giving him the confidence, yada, 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 yada. Mm-hmm. And he said, would you come and teach these skills to my brothers in the fraternity?
How about that?
Up there and I did it, and it was wonderful. It was just too cool
to have,
and they were
college
listening.
Students that wanted to listen to what you heard here
exactly.
had to say.
I asked him if he wanted it from the social aspect, which is what I taught him many years ago, mm-hmm. or did they want it from the business aspect? And he got back to me and said, we want it from the business aspect. And so they needed to know how to tie a tie, a full Windsor knot. And it was super.
And how to sit down at a table and know how to converse and eat and not embarrass yourself because you can't cut that piece of meat, or you pick it up with your fork and just, caveman style.
It's holding that knife and the fork and let's attack it.
Yeah.
And this is one of the reasons that at home we have 14 candles on the table at night, and we light them every night. And I have my grandchildren with us. And when I don't light the candles, I am reprimanded.
For real?
Yes. They're used to it. This is part of everyday life. And I think it's very important that families take the time to spend the moment together.
Sure.
Enjoy each other's company. And the kids learn so much about the parents, their beliefs, their values. And this is where it all gets passed on.
Sure.
Otherwise, we're operating in a vacuum, and the kids make up their own rules.
Well, we see too much of that today. We definitely see too much of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it has been an utter delight to have you here today with us on Meet Me at the Diner. I certainly have enjoyed it. Now, you have a website that tells more about the etiquette, and if somebody's interested in getting a class together, this is something that you're doing. This is something you want to do more of. You've got to get over 10,000 students, right?
I have had.
You've already over 10,000.
Right.
Okay. So she's working on 20,000.
I hope I'm still alive by the time we get to 20.
But what's your website, Barbara?
It's if you just look up Barbara Hinkle, you'll find it. And it's Hinkle with an E-L.
Hinkle, H-I-N-K-E-L. And she has a website that tells all about what she has done and her etiquette training. She is available for groups. She is available for schools. You do all this type of stuff, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
The best situation is when you have 20 people.
20?
Because it's like going to a cocktail party. If there are only 5 people there, you wonder where all the cool people are.
Right.
And what's the matter with you?
Right.
So that's where numbers make the difference. And it becomes fun and a social outing.
Absolutely. We need to see more of this, but do check out BarbaraHinkle.com. That's BarbaraHinkle.com. If anybody wants to call you, what's a good telephone number, Barbara?
864-391-8356.
391-8356. She does live over there in McCormick. She'd love to talk to you about this. Barbara Hinkle, thanks so much for coming out here today.
Thank you, Anne. It was lots of fun.
Okay, I knew it would be. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for us. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye. Tomorrow morning, I'll be back at 8 o'clock in the morning, 9:05. Yes, we're going to have former Lieutenant Governor Andre Bauer on the air with us. Then I'm going to run down to the mall. We may stay on a little bit later, and we're going to the job fair. So hang on to your hats. It's going to be a busy morning right here on WCRS. Bye-bye, everybody.